From KCPW in Salt Lake City, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. For decades, the Jordan River was abused, neglected, and ignored. Raw sewage was dumped into the waterway, waste from farms flowed into the river, and 40 smelters contaminated the Jordan with heavy metals, including lead and arsenic. Environmental protections in the 1970s changed all that, and since then, the Jordan River has been restored to the vital waterway it is, with groomed trails, parks, flood controls, and improved wildlife habitat. Officials are now focusing on regional cooperation to keep taking care of the Jordan River corridor, and today on the program, we're talking about those efforts and how government, landowners, and river users are working together. Plus, another BBC Olympic update live from London. All that and your calls coming up after the news. Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Once contaminated with raw sewage, farm waste, and heavy metals from nearby mines, the Jordan River has been cleaned up and recognized as a vital natural resource flowing from Utah Lake to Great Salt Lake. A coordinated effort to restore and preserve the Jordan River is underway, and today on the program, we're learning more about what's envisioned for the future of the Jordan River Corridor. Joining me in studio is Laura Hansen. She is Executive Director of the Jordan River Commission, and she joins me here. And Laura, good morning. Thanks so much for your time.
Good morning. Thank you.
Corey Rushton is also with us. He was elected to the West Valley City Council as an at-large councilman in 2007. He's also the chair of the Jordan River Commission, and he joins me in studio as well. Corey Rushton, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Later on in the program, we'll check in once again with the BBC for an Olympic update live from London. But first, the Jordan River Corridor. How do you use the Jordan River, and what do you think should be done to restore and preserve the waterway? You can give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255, or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Laura Hansen, I'll start with you. Tell us about this latest effort to coordinate care of the Jordan River. What is the Jordan River Commission?
Thanks. So the Jordan River Commission is a partnership of local governmental officials and community leaders, and we are together leading an effort to work with stakeholders along the river to identify and put in place effective strategies, or what we call best management practices, for caring for the Jordan River Corridor and increasing its value from both an environmental, recreation, economic, and cultural perspective for all of us. And so we're working together, trying to develop some tools and guidelines that are both consistent but also flexible to provide a baseline foundation for management of the Jordan River Corridor.
So when we talk about stakeholders, who are we talking about?
Primarily, in 2007, 2008, Envision Utah and Salt Lake County conducted a big public visioning process called the Blueprint Jordan River, and that involved about 3,000 members of the general public, as well as local decision makers and leaders. And they came up with all of these different suggestions and ideas for the future of the Jordan River. And we're now trying to figure out how to implement the public's suggestions. And so primarily right now, what we're targeting our efforts on the implementers, the decision makers, and the people that then need to take these policies or these ideas and put them into policy in their own communities.
Hmm. The Jordan River flows about 50 miles between Utah Lake and Great Salt Lake. Tell us a bit more about the physical aspects of this waterway.
Well, it's a unique river, and I've actually been trying to find some comparables across the nation, and it's hard to find one, actually. As you mentioned, it flows 50 miles from the Utah Lake to the Great Salt Lake. That flows through 3 different counties, 15 different cities, and the Jordan River is one of the most heavily regulated rivers around. It's amazing how many different entities, from state and federal management agencies to local governments and nonprofit groups, how many people have a role in the Jordan River. It's a really unique river in that it has no resemblance of a natural hydrologic cycle. The amount of water within the river is controlled by a gate, essentially, out of Utah Lake. And so the water level can range from maybe 80 CFS to 1,000 CFS in a matter of hours, which is pretty much unheard of in a normal natural system.
And who uses the water in the Jordan River?
It goes to a lot of different places. Primarily, it's irrigation quality water. So there are, I think, maybe 5 or 6 different canals that come off of the Jordan River. So different water users, but primarily agricultural purposes.
Speaking with Laura Hansen, she's executive director of the Jordan River Commission, also with us, West Valley City Councilman Corey Rushton, and he is chair of the Jordan River Commission Board. As board chair, Corey Rushton, you know, you've been in business for a couple of years. Why do you think you need this kind of coordinated effort between local governments and property owners and others who have an interest in the Jordan River?
Well, it's such a big task that you know, there's not only you know, the geographic scope of it, but there's also just the scope of that it's not just the environmental concerns we're focused on, but there's cultural benefits from the river. There's recreation benefits of the river. There's economic development benefits of utilizing a river. And so, you know, coming together and trying to bring all interested parties, and when we say all interested, it's, you know, not just the governments, but it's the nonprofits, the recreation groups, the businesses, all of them, to try to have a cohesive vision across the river. You know, in West Valley, we could implement our plan and hope that South Salt Lake and Salt Lake City and Taylorsville kind of match up with our vision. But, you know, really having this regional planning instrument to bring all the interested parties together is what's going to make it happen, and what's going to make it happen sooner rather than later, really.
All of this attention has really been focused on the Jordan River within our lifetimes. I mean, yeah. It's been within the past 4 or 5 decades here. The Jordan River did not always get this kind of care and attention. It was a dumping place for many, many years. Can you give us a bit of the history of the Jordan River and what changed?
Well, you know, with it, you know, when the pioneers, I guess, first came to this valley, it was, you know, it was a hard life and a tough just to have the sustenance. And, you know, some of those pioneers that first even crossed over the Jordan River, I mean, that was a major milestone to be, you know, west of the Jordan River and try to survive on the west side of the valley and that. But, you know, I guess I really credit, you know, a lot of the change and the renewed interest to it is people looking at other river corridors across the United States, whether it's, you know, the Charles River in Boston or the Tennessee River through the Chattanooga area or the Riverwalk in San Antonio, people say, you know, rivers are just not here for, you know, us to have a dumping ground or an irrigation canal, but they can be, you know, cultural, they can be recreational, but they can also, you know, it'd be nice to have a restaurant to sit out and look across one. And so I think as that realization has come forth that it's just not to survive, but it, you know, is actually a major quality of life thing is really, I think, where the change of the mindset's been.
Mm-hmm. And the environmental regulations probably didn't hurt either.
Yeah, exactly.
Laura Hansen.
Yeah, you know, and that's a little bit beyond my area of expertise, but yeah, the Clean Water Act, you know, had a major role in limiting the types of things that you can dump into the river as well. You know, as a result of some of those earlier problems, a lot of the communities developed with the backs of houses facing the river because it wasn't a real desirable place. But I think we're starting to see, as Councilman Rushton just mentioned, kind of a renewal and realization that it could be a nice resource and that it makes sense to turn around and embrace the river and create it as an amenity and a part of our communities, not just, you know, kind of the sewer in the back door background.
What is the water quality of the Jordan River right now?
It's improving. There is a section in the lower Jordan River, which is measured from about 2100 south north to the Great Salt Lake, that is listed as an impaired waterway by the EPA.
What does that mean, impaired?
It means that it doesn't meet basic minimum water quality standards. But the Division of Water Quality is currently conducting a study to establish what they call the TMDL, or total maximum daily load of pollutants and things that you can add to the river. So they have figured out kind of what the quality of the water is today and what's causing some of the problems. Primarily, it's a lot of decomposing organic matter in the river, more so than wastewater or things like that, so leaves that are decaying, which dissolves the oxygen in the river. And so they kind of understand what's going on in the river. The next step is really to figure out how to correct that, how to minimize problems.
what creatures use the river, live on the river?
It's, you know, it's amazing that in this very urbanized region, you can go down, you can find beaver, you can find deer. There are so many different kinds of animals and birds that you can find within this corridor. It's really surprising when, if you haven't been down there before, if you're there in the morning or late evening, the kind of wildlife you can see. The river is also part of the North American Central Migratory Flyway, and so over 200 species of birds use this corridor as well as the Great Salt Lake and Utah Lake as part of their migratory trip from Canada down to Mexico. So,
A call from Rob from Sandy, couldn't stay on the line, says he supports preserving the river and wants to know about how big game use the river. Laura Hansen?
As I mentioned, there are deer that are down there. I think they find their way down to the river corridor and then sort of get stuck there because there's development all around. But there are different areas where they can connect. And I think one of the ideas that the Jordan River Commission and the members of the commission are interested in is preserving some corridors, natural corridors that are east-west connecting to the Jordan River as well, like the Parley's Trail and the Dimpledale Trail. And I think those areas where, and Dry Creek in Draper, where those connect with the Jordan River provides a nice migratory and travel route for large game.
Councilman Rushton, what do we get out of, I mean, what does West Valley City get out of being part of this commission? Because, I mean, so much of these regional shared interests, I mean, it comes down to who decides what gets to be on my portion of the river and who pays for it. So, you know, what's West Valley's position? What's your take on that kind of autonomy and responsibility from the local viewpoint?
Yeah, well, I mean, first and foremost, I mean, each city and county and planning authority, you know, the Jordan River Commission isn't trying to usurp that or take over. We're just trying to lend some best practices to it and, you know, help them out saying, hey, this is what really worked in West Valley and it can, you know, work for you in Taylorsville or, hey, you know, South Jordan, this, you know, your park was great here. Show us in West Valley how to do it. But, you know, just as somebody that's in the political arena, the Jordan River Commission has been kind of a fascinating study because, you know, last year up at the legislature, we had the mayor of Taylorsville going up to lobby for a bridge to complete the trail in West Jordan. And we had, you know, just members of the Sandy City Council coming down to work on projects in West Valley City. And, you know, that's in some ways kind of unheard of in this day and age of politics. But to really see that joint venture that, you know, we at the Jordan River Commission realize that the river belongs to people in Vernal, it belongs to people in Moab, St. George. It's really a state and a regional resource. And West Valley just kind of has a stewardship to take care of their portion. And we're looking for help as we develop our section. The Jordan River Marketplace is going to be a jewel of our city and down by the cultural center and to have the other resources of the state and nonprofit and the other agencies will be, you know, just a huge benefit to our city and the river in general.
West Valley City Councilman Corey Rushton is with us. Also, Laura Hansen, Executive Director of the Jordan River Commission. We're talking about the health of the Jordan River, about plans to restore and preserve the waterway. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. We need to take a break. We'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Today on the program, we're talking about the Jordan River, the health of this 50-mile waterway, and ways to balance recreation with the environmental issues along the corridor. A group of stakeholders will discuss best management practices for the Jordan River tomorrow. That's Tuesday, August 7th from 8 to 11 at the Utah Cultural Celebration Center in West Valley City. It is open to the public. And joining me in studio, Laura Hansen. She's Executive Director of the Jordan River Commission, as well as West Valley City Councilman Corey Rushton. He's also the chair of the Jordan River Commission. And you can join our conversation if you like. Do you kayak down the Jordan River? Do you walk along its trails? Do you think the river should be promoted as a recreational amenity or left alone? Give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. So we haven't really talked about the plan, the big plan, the big picture vision for the Jordan River. Laura Hansen, give us an outline. What does the open space plan look like for this part of the valley?
Well, you know, the blueprint Jordan River is, includes open space, but it's also a lot more than that. Back in 2008, I think it was, this blueprint Jordan River document, this vision was put together with a lot of public input from about, you know, through workshops and surveys and a variety of different things. And the public came up with five different big ideas to be included in that, which include a lake-to-lake blue-green trail, so completion of the Jordan River Parkway paved trail, as well as the ability to boat from lake to lake, a 20-mile linear nature preserve, so preservation of as much open space as we can along the river corridor. Also, the creation of regional and neighborhood river centers, which are like mixed-use villages, a place where you can get a cup of coffee, sit and read a book, you know, maybe rent a bicycle or a canoe to enjoy the river, as well as enhanced regional access, so better connection between public transit and pedestrian trails to the river corridor, as well as environmental education. So it's a very broad vision and incorporates a lot of different ideas.
And how are you approaching it at this point? So you've got this, you know, big idea out there. How do you make it happen?
Well, that's kind of the next step. And I think the Jordan River Commission is really instrumental and helpful. And otherwise, without this organization, it would be pretty much impossible to implement a vision as broad as this one, simply because of the number of stakeholders and entities that are involved. But, you know, we really all have a stake in the future of the Jordan River Corridor because it flows through so many cities. It really ties us all together, both symbolically and physically. And you know, because of that, we really need to look at it as a whole system and use long-term thinking. And if we all work together, we're going to have a lot greater strides and successes.
Hmm. Councilman Rushton, how do you think people perceive the river today?
Oh, you know, there's all kinds of different perceptions on the river. And, you know, what we really found is that, you know, once we got established as a commission, that one of the calls or their emails or questions we got asked most frequently was, hey, where can I go bike? Or where can I go, you know, kayak and canoe? So that was why we just got together with the National Park Service and Salt Lake County to create the trail map. And it's kind of the first real cohesive trail map vision that shows, here's some of the wildlife, here's some places to go, here's equestrian trails, here's bike trails, and, you know, go at it. Because I think there might be, you know, the general sense that I've got is that there's a fondness for the river, but there maybe is a little bit of apprehension. And this trail map, which, you know, just released and found in county outlets as well as online at the Jordan River Commission website, is one of those barriers to break down that apprehension of, hey, maybe I've heard something about, you know, the river, or this is not a good place to go, or it's flooded or whatnot. But the map is, I think, was a real key and was a good collaboration something that came forth from the commission to really start to break down, you know, those barriers of you know, how and when and where it can be used and utilized.
How do you use the river? Well, I mean, do you have a favorite
boy,
hangout,
you know,
spot?
I do, you know, I all kinds of things that I never thought I would do. And, you know, my favorite story that I tell on it is that, you know, starting to do a lot more boating and kayaking down the river, because you can see it from just a totally different view. And, you know, one of my first experience on the river was me and another West Valley councilman was in a canoe. And when you get two elected officials in a boat, they both think they're the captain. And we were steering against each other and ended up swimming a good length of it. And, you know, it was kind of a good metaphor for the river that, you know, we need to be paddling and really working together, or else you're, you know, going to be swimming. But love the swimming or the more kayaking than swimming. But and the biking, I found, is also, you know, a very pleasant thing. And we've been grateful to have a lot of people do cleanups on some of the trails to enhance biking, to get rid of some of those goat head weeds that sometimes make it prohibitive. So.
I read in the report that there are three primary users: equestrians, pedestrians, and cyclists. Mm-hmm. Can all of these three parties peacefully coexist on one trail, Laura Hansen?
I think so. You know, actually, the equestrian trail is a parallel trail. So it's there's the paved multi-use trail that pedestrians and cyclists use, but also rollerbladers and But then there's a separate equestrian trail next to that, which is a gravel pathway. And that doesn't extend the entire length of the corridor, but a good portion of it. And you know what I love about the Jordan River is that it's sort of this place for everyone. You go down there and you see people from all different walks of life. You know, a lot of people even use the Parkway Trail to commute to and from work every day. So you see people who are out there for exercise, the moms pushing the stroller with their little kids and kids on bikes. But then also these people that are sort of hardcore exercisers and folks that are just getting to and from work. It's a nice place for everyone.
Councilman Rushton, you mentioned the prospect of building a cafe or, you know, other kinds of amenities along the river corridor. I'm wondering how people are looking at, I mean, there's often a tension between development and preservation. Mm-hmm. And how do you maintain that balance? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I think we're real lucky with the blueprint it's identified those spots. And it's also identified kind of a gold, silver, and bronze standard for setbacks along the river that will preserve the environmental integrity of it, but also allow, you know, for some development. And so, I think that's the beauty of the Jordan River Commission is that we have people on our commission that are strict to chain themselves to trees, environmentalists, and then sitting right next to members of the commission that are developers, and that's what they do by trade, and that they say, hey, there's actually a way that we can do this together to preserve and protect the environment, but also to, you know, enhance it and put in a few rooftops or put in the Riverside Cafe and boat rental. And so, you know, I think that, you know, that's why that the blueprint document was, you know, so exhaustive, was to make sure that, you know, every possible use from transportation to culture to recreation to environmental uses were covered, you know, under this. So
in a practical sense, though, are you getting interest, you know, nibbles from private developers out there saying, you know what, this would be a great thing for us to look into, to pursue?
Yeah, I there's definitely spots on the river that are set and ready for that. And in West Valley, we have near the Utah Cultural Celebration Center, we just opened up a connector road there that, you know, will facilitate some development. We're going to call the Jordan River Marketplace, and it'll have a good setback from the river and have hopefully some river amenities, but try to be one of those hub for international shopping and try to celebrate our diversity in West Valley and put it as a destination spot along the river. So we're excited to see that project move forward with the help of the commission.
How many of those nodes do you foresee, Laura Hansen, along the riverway?
The Blueprint Jordan River identifies seven different regional river centers like that. And I think, as Councilman Rushton just mentioned, the beauty of all of this is, and the message that we're trying to share, is that economic development and restoration don't have to be mutually exclusive, and you can have both. And in fact, if you preserve open space and if you enhance the water quality and enhance the environmental aspects of the river corridor, it becomes that much nicer of an amenity and the kind of place that people want to go. And you want to turn your building towards the river and embrace it and build that as a part of or kind of a centerpiece of your projects and your community. So that's really our goal, is to first enhance the river corridor from an environmental perspective that then reinforces and makes it a more desirable piece for development projects. So.
Speaking with Laura Hansen, she's executive director of the Jordan River Commission. Also with us, West Valley City Councilman Corey Rushton, and who is also the chair of the commission. We're talking about the Jordan River. If you'd like to join our conversation, 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. I have to say, you know, I think some people may have reservations about the river from a safety perspective. They think, oh, this is in an urban area, but it is still fairly isolated. Would I want to walk along the corridor alone? Laura Hansen, how do you deal with those kinds of security concerns?
You know, the poor Jordan River has a little bit of a stigma, doesn't it? But we're trying to overcome that. And I think, you know, I go back to the urban planning theorist Jane Jacobs and her seminal work, the oh gosh, now I can't even remember the name, but that's bad, Art and Life of Cities. But she talks about eyes on the street. And I think that's the concept that we want here, is the citizen surveillance. The more people we get down to the river, realizing how beautiful it is and how nice it is, the more people you have there, and it becomes less conducive for the less desirable elements that sometimes you hear about. And so, you know, it's, I think those incidences of crime and problems are very rare, but you hear about them because, you know, that's news, and so that's what people pick up on. But it happens very, very infrequently, and I think the more people we get down there, the less likely those types of things are to happen. And so get down there, get on your bike, and the more you're there, the safer it will be for everyone.
Do you have a sense of how many people are using the Jordan River right now?
You know, we don't have any way of really counting that, and it would be really great to know that, actually. The challenge is it's so long, you know. It's people use a small segment of it, and so it's hard to count.
Right. Let's go to our phones, get some callers in on this conversation. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Let's go to Jack in West Jordan. Jack, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, thanks. Go right ahead.
I've had a thought about, I see a lot of the little ponds that have been developed, you know, throughout the area for people to fish in locally, that makes it so they don't have to drive 80 miles to do a little bit of fishing, and I was wondering why they couldn't sidestep the Jordan River and develop little ponds along the way there to divert water into those things for people to fish and possibly even ice skating in the winter, and just a general fun little pond that would be developed along the Jordan River.
Hmm. Jack, interesting idea. Laura Hansen, are fishing ponds part of the blueprint Jordan River?
They are. Actually, there's several of them. And if you pick up a copy of our new Jordan River Parkway Trail map, those urban fishing ponds are actually identified on the map. So it's a great idea. It fits exactly within this vision and brings more people down there. And one more way to enjoy the river corridor.
But I've also pulled some big catfish out of the Jordan River just fishing it itself. And so, you know, there's people that do fish it along the river as well. So, you know, there's something to be said about even both of them.
Sounds like a good idea. Yeah. So thanks for that.
Jack, thanks so much for the call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Any other ideas like that may be a little unconventional that people haven't thought of? You know, ways to use the Jordan River, embrace the Jordan River.
I'll tell you one here that you know, blew my mind when I found out about it, and that there's actually a section of the river, and it's you know, kind of around 21st South, you know, West Valley, getting to Salt Lake, and it's kind of a wide section of river, and it's not very deep, but I know a lot of people are watching the Olympics now, but that Olympic rowing takes place on the Jordan River down there. And the Wasatch Rowing Foundation is down there in that, and one of the auxiliary canals rowing away weekly during summer months. And it's just one of those things that you never would have thought you would have seen, you know, in the middle of the Salt Lake Valley on the Jordan River. But Olympic-style rowing is on the Jordan River. And hopefully one day that with the popularity of that growing, that, you know, we can have some boat centers along the river to help introduce more people into sports such as that.
Hmm. What are the challenges still facing this waterway? Laura Hansen.
You know, I think one of the challenges is that what one entity does affects everyone else. From, you know, if you don't manage the invasive species on your property, the seeds get in the river and they wash downstream. And somebody who's working really hard to eradicate an invasive species then all of a sudden gets all this fresh crop of a weed. And so we really need to work together. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges. And the reason that the Jordan River Commission exists is to help create a forum for discussion and dialogue and education so that people understand some of these challenges and how we really do need to work together to make it happen. So
it must be difficult to align the interests of Utah County with West Valley, with Davis County. I mean, they're all different entities.
Yeah, they are. But I think, you know, maybe what we have, the divide, if there is one really, and it is, it's not so much geographic, because, you know, Davis County and Utah County have been great. It's more kind of the cities that have developed and are advanced in their plans of the river versus those that it's still just fresh, open territory. And so that's where we really need, there's a few members city. There's a few cities that are along the river that have yet to become members of the commission just because, you know, maybe they're kind of ahead of the rest of the group. But, if you're in one of those cities in that we really need your expertise and your help to come along and help us as we get to, where some of the more advanced cities are. So,
Well, money's tight, though. I mean, each of the cities is going to have to pay for the section of the river, right?
Yeah.
Is there a reluctance there, or are there funding mechanisms that maybe not everybody knows about?
You know, I think that it's the strength really of the commission is the membership of it, and that, you know, I was back in Washington D.C. last year, and as West Valley Councilman, it was sometimes hard to get a lot of face time with maybe some of our delegation, but as soon as they found out, the chair of the Jordan River Commission is here, and it's Davis, Salt Lake, and Utah County and most of the cities in that, and with over a million and a half people constituency representative, that they start to take notice of that, and that will eventually open doors and opportunities. And it also proved very successful with us at the legislature last year to be up there and have a united front to pursue and push some of the interests laid out in the blueprint Jordan River.
Mm-hmm. How do you envision the Jordan River? I don't know, 10 years, 20 years, what's it going to look like? Will it be substantially the same or significantly different?
I hope the good parts of it stay the same and we improve on a lot of other things. I think with the Division of Water Quality's TMDL process that the water quality will improve, and I think that alone will make a huge difference in encouraging people to come down. The more invasive species that we can manage and bring in natural native species, I think that'll improve the quality of habitat along the river. I hope we can preserve as much open space as we can and then create these river centers and the recreational elements and things that bring people down to the river. I hope it really becomes a centerpiece for our region and a great amenity, a selling point for new businesses looking to relocate here. I hope it's the kind of place that if you're looking at a little real estate, flyer, it says close to the Jordan River Parkway. And I hope that becomes a real selling point. And I think it is for a lot of people already, but I hope we see more of that.
Mm-hmm. From a policymaker's perspective, what do you see in the future of the Jordan River Corridor?
We just see it as a potential to make life better for people that live near that corridor, and it also just to drive certain types of economic development, whether it be as we kind of mentioned that the Jordan River's kind of was a transportation corridor, and I really see it in the near future as well as the long term future being something that's going to be more used for transportation to connect you to a tracks line or to a bus line, or to your neighborhood. And so I see the transportation aspect of it dramatically improving, as well as just the recreation. Outdoor recreation has been big on people's minds in Salt Lake the last week, and it's because we have a lot of good features, and the Jordan River is one of them, and I think it'll be continued to draw interest in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you've got this commission, you've got a lot of stakeholders on board. Are there still some who are skeptical of this plan?
I'm really seeing a sense of optimism on it. I kind of say in the political world, people that ask me like, wow, I can't believe, Corey, that you're involved in such a big task of the Jordan River Commission. And I say, look, in Utah politics right now, it's motherhood, apple pie, and the Jordan River, because those are three things that everybody loves. And there's a real optimism for turning that into a real asset. And so the time is right and the team is right. And we'll continue to push forward on this.
Mm-hmm. Hurdles that you feel like you need to clear, do you have some kind of a timeline when we would see some of these big ideas, the vision implemented? Laura Hansen?
I think that is one of the challenges with implementing a vision like this, is it is sort of a generational type of project, and it's going to take some time to fully realize it. But, we're making great strides. There's only four sections of the Jordan River Parkway Trail that are incomplete, so in the entire 45-mile trail system, and we've got one of those that hopefully will be filled by the end of next summer. And so we're making progress and visible progress. There are things that we can start seeing improvements almost immediately. But, you know, improving the water quality is going to take a few years, and it will require the local governments along the river to implement some policies that better manage stormwater and things like that. And that takes some time. But, mm-hmm. yeah, we're on our way.
Why should Joe Q Public care? I mean, clearly that there are stakeholders, there are property owners, there are policymakers. Well, you know, why should citizens just generally care about what happens at the Jordan River? Corey Rushton?
I think that, you know, yeah, there's those that have an interest in it for recreation or for environmental reasons or for whatever. But, you know, I think when it comes down to it, really, that, you know, one of the big, strong values in West Valley City, and I know throughout the state, is just being responsible in your stewardship. And we along the Jordan River here in the three counties and 15 cities have been given a stewardship to look after and take care of this river. And I think people, you know, even if they don't go down and boat or go across it, that they say, hey, this was here, and, you know, it's my job to take care of it and leave it better than I found it. And so I said, that's why we just kind of tell people that you know, everybody needs to be involved, and that everybody has a stake in it, and that it's just something that you know, our children and grandchildren will look back to kind of this time and to this commission and offer a thank you, because you know, we decided that now is the time to take action on it.
Mm. Laura Hansen, is that the sense that you're getting, that people are kind of, you know, it is on the radar now?
It is. There's a lot of momentum. There are so many different projects and cities and stakeholders and nonprofit groups and community groups that are all focused on river corridor projects. There's an awful lot of momentum there. And it is one of those things that, you know, I think if we do the right thing now, it can be a resource for generations to come. In addition, I think it's also one of those just quality of life type projects that will really improve the way we think of, you know, our quality of life along the Wasatch Front. When you think of Boise, you think of their riverway, their greenbelt. You think of San Antonio, you think of Riverwalk. I think the Jordan River can become one of those unifying and identifying elements for the Wasatch Front.
Laura Hansen, she's executive director of the Jordan River Commission. Laura, you've released a set of trail maps, you know, people can download. We'll have a link on our website, kcpw.org. Are you taking public comment on this next phase of the blueprint?
We are. You know, we're primarily focused on focusing this effort on the implementers and the people that would need to adopt the policies in their local communities to implement this blueprint. But, you know, the public is always encouraged to participate in everything we do. We'll post all of our draft documents on our website. People can feel free to download them, review them. I love to talk on the phone to people. I love to answer emails. And so, yeah, if anyone has any ideas, we're always welcome to your input. In addition, on our website, we have a suggestion map, an interactive suggestion map. And so you can go on there and navigate around on a Google map and put a little place marker on the map and say, hey, you know, there's a broken water fountain in this location. I didn't know if you knew that. Or it would be great if you could put a nature center. This would be a great spot for a nature center. And so people are encouraged to interact with us this way. And then I forward those on to the appropriate managing entity or elected officials in those cities so that people know what the ideas are that folks have talked about.
Hmm. Well, we'll leave it there. Laura Hansen, Executive Director of the Jordan River Commission, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
And Councilman Corey Rushton from West Valley City, Chair of the Jordan River Commission. Corey, thanks so much to you as well. Coming up next, an Olympic update live from London, but first a break. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce, and this is City Views. For the past week and a half, the world has been celebrating the achievements of its best athletes and hearing very human stories of those who have had to overcome injury and hardship to go for the gold, from Oscar Pistorius to Michael Phelps to Venus Williams. Today on the program, we're getting another update from the BBC live from London. And joining me now is BBC reporter Adrian Hobart, joining us live from BBC Studios in London. Adrian, good morning.
Good morning, Jennifer. Lovely to be with you.
Thank you so much for your time. If you have questions or comments about the Olympic coverage, about the Olympic events, about what is going on in London, you can join our conversation. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Adrian Hobart, day 11 of the 2012 Summer Games. We are on the downside of this event. What's the mood in London today?
Well, it's still basking in the wonderful weekend that was great for British sports fans on the Saturday night. An incredible night of gold in the Olympic Stadium, with 6 golds overall, which for a country of our size is unprecedented. And then, of course, Usain Bolt's 100 meters, which we witnessed last night in the UK, absolutely astonishing performance. And you know, one of the icons of modern sport. So there's still this sort of basking feeling. It does feel a little quieter. The Olympic program quietens down. The swimming is over. The athletics is dominating. And some of those events that have dominated the first week, with tennis, for instance, have come to an end. So it is a little bit quieter. There are fewer golds up for grabs. But there is still this fantastic atmosphere in London, it has to be said.
We've heard some reports here that many people have abandoned London because of concerns about traffic, you know, that the West End of London is essentially deserted. What's your take on that? I mean, are the games affecting life in London as you know it?
Yes, I think so. I mean, there is a definite change of pace to London. London is one of the most frenetic cities you'll ever come to. At the best of times. August is generally a quieter month, but I have to say that the West End of London, the times I've been down to the West End of London, have been quieter. It's been almost eerie. It feels like, I would say, a national holiday day or something like a Sunday afternoon where everyone's relaxed and it's just a little bit, there's less traffic on the roads, there are fewer commuters. It does feel that way. It's got a very special, friendly atmosphere, which London's not that well known for, to be perfectly honest. You know, we can be quite aggressive and, you know, bash each other out of the way occasionally, a bit like New Yorkers, I suppose. Perhaps less so than New Yorkers, but nonetheless, you get the sort of feel for it. That is not the case at the moment. And that's largely down, I think, to the efforts of the fabulous volunteers that we've got for these Olympics, 70,000 of them. They're all over the city, pointing visitors in the right direction. And actually, if I were to sort of credit, they've got that American feel of hospitality, which I don't think the Brits are very used to doing, to be honest. But they have created this atmosphere, which is fantastic. And the visitors that are coming to the games in general are picking up on that. It is a unique atmosphere. Partly celebration of British success, partly the pride of holding a Games, which, listen, for 7 years we've been hearing this is going to be a disaster, it's costing us this, the security is going to be terrible, that we're going to make a mess of it, our transport won't work. It is working. We've got it right, and we're very proud of it.
There is no Olympics without a scandal. Since our last conversation with the BBC, 8 badminton players were disqualified over charges they were tanking matches to their advantage. How is the scandal being translated there in London?
Well, it was very much the focus of the first week of competition. There was a sense of... In fact, it was one of our reporters on the BBC, John Bennett, who was in the badminton hall over at Wembley, who witnessed it and was just saying, what's going on here? The world number one pairing are hitting the shuttlecock into the net, and they're hitting it out wide, and they're serving poorly. And it was very clear that something was going wrong. So he was the first to call it to the world, really. You know, and I'm proud of him for doing so. And there was just this sort of bewilderment that Olympian values could be devalued so quickly. But we've seen other examples of this. Even today, there's an Algerian runner has been thrown out of the Olympic Games for tanking his 800 meters heat by withdrawing after 200 meters because he was saving energy for a semi-final in the 1500 meters. So there are other examples of this sort of thing. And everyone's watching the basketball this evening because Spain, one of the better teams in this competition, are playing against Brazil. And they're desperate to lose the match tonight because they want to avoid Team USA. So, you know, we're going to watch with interest to see how they do it, because that's the, you know, if they win that match, you end up with the USA, and then no one wants that in the perspective of trying to win a medal.
speaking with BBC reporter Adrian Hobart, live from the BBC studios in London. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. You mentioned a British pride coming out, spilling over because of some of the medals that you've won. Talk about Great Britain's Andy Murray over Roger Federer. In going for the gold in tennis must have been a very sweet victory for that home crowd.
Yes, it was. You know, Andy Murray has a lot of fans in this country, but he also has a lot of detractors. He divides opinion in the United Kingdom. You know, obviously the Scots love him. The English are a bit ambivalent towards him. Personally, I think he's a fabulous tennis player, but it's something about his the way he speaks and the way he carries himself. Whereas, you know, a lot of, let's say, the southern half of England, which, you know, a lot of people go to Wimbledon from there, they love Roger Federer. But this was a very sweet moment. I mean, the manner of Andy Murray's performance was he was playing tennis that we've never seen from him before, playing angles and cross-court shots and just the sheer physicality of what he was doing. He was like a different player, and it could have been the different environment. You know, he was playing for his team. He has been playing doubles as well, which is something he doesn't usually do at Grand Slams, and that was sweet. But you know, to see him finally conquer Roger Federer in a five-set match was something, and it was beautiful to see. You know, when he climbed up through the crowds, there was an 11-year-old boy from a nearby county of Essex who broke out of his father's arms. They were sitting at the top of the center court, and he ran down the stairs and demanded a hug from Andy Murray. And Andy apparently said, yeah, sure, anything for a fan. And that could be the crossover moment in the hearts of the British nation. Wins a gold medal for us and a silver in the mixed doubles, but most importantly, had his opportunity to show that he has a side of sense of humor and a softer side that we don't often see.
You mentioned the victory of Usain Bolt, 9.63 seconds in the 100 meters. But one of the other stories we've been following here in the States is Oscar Pistorius making history as the first double amputee to compete in the Olympics. He did lose eventually in the 400 meters, but I mean, what do you think he won?
Well, he won the respect of his fellow athletes, if you want to describe them as able-bodied athletes, I suppose, because over the last few years, there's been this long debate about should Oscar Pistorius be in the Olympics? Are his carbon fiber blades giving him an advantage that is unfair compared to athletes who have legs, basically? So the situation, that was a big debate, but I think there was a really telling moment at the end of that, semi-final of the 400 meters when he swapped bib numbers with one of his competitors. And that is a really rare thing. You know, you treasure your bib number and you hold on to it if you're an athlete, but he swapped it. And that was, I think, a nod, the final recognition. This guy deserves to be here. He's fought, you know, incredible challenges. And I think that, you know, while he wasn't competitive at that level, he will be still involved in the 4x400 meters for South Africa. You know, he is one of the symbols of these games, one of the icons, and he's won the respect of his fellow athletes. So I think that's possibly the most important thing.
Speaking with BBC reporter Adrian Hobart live from London, we've got about 30 seconds left. We're on day 11. What's to watch?
Well, we're watching in this country show jumping, which is not it's not something we watch very often in this country, I have to say. But we've just won a gold medal in a jump off against the Netherlands, which takes our total to 17 gold medals. We're catching you, USA. I think that puts us 13 behind now. you know, a mere figure. The thing to
Who's
watch
counting,
tonight.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of great athletics action tonight. If we can think of the achievement of Russia's Yelena Isinbayeva in the pole vault, she has a really realistic chance of becoming the first female athlete in Olympic history to win three field golds in the stadium tonight, which would be an astonishing achievement. As I said, that basketball match, watch that with interest to see what Brazil and Spain do to try and avoid Team USA. But athletics is really the focus for this whole of this final week. It's not quite perhaps the stellar lineup that we've had over the first two or three days in the 100 meters and things like that, but that's a big focus. And a lot of sports are getting to the real sort of nitty gritty bit now. So you know, we're talking about water polo, and we're talking about the boxing competition is getting to the knockout stages, things like that. You know, it's really getting quite quite exciting. There'll be a lot of things that will now come into sharper focus. Rowing has been replaced by canoeing, for instance, in the sprint canoeing event. So, you know, new things take place. But obviously, we don't have that twin focus of athletics and swimming that we did on Friday and Saturday.
Mm. Before I let you go, many viewers in the U.S. have really been griping about NBC's coverage, tape delaying the highlights to boost their ratings. I understand the BBC is taking a very different approach to broadcasting the games. Describe that strategy for us very briefly.
Yeah, okay. In essence, you can watch anything you wish live. Anything you wish live. Every single event is being streamed by the BBC. For the first time, we're the only broadcaster in the world doing it. We have 24 live streams of action, so whatever is happening in the Olympic Games is happening live, using smart TV and online to be able to access that. That is quite unique. And we're also running extra radio stations, so there's three of those nationally bringing you the live action as well. So this is the point. We wanted to be the most accessible broadcaster and bring you the, it's an utter contrast to what NBC are doing with their tape delay.
And do you think you that's where we're headed?
Like. Well, I mean, it's the question is, if NBC is spending quite as much money as they do, over $1 billion to get here and put the games on, they want to protect them. Their commercial asset, if you like. The BBC pay considerably less than that. NBC themselves have a huge presence here in the Olympic Park, in London as a whole, much, much bigger than the BBC's. But I think, demand will change things. I mean, the American audience will demand in the future, if you've got new technology and new ways of accessing it, live is where it's at. And I'm sure NBC will have to yield to that eventually.
BBC reporter Adrian Hobart joining us live from London. Adrian, thanks very much for your time.
It's a great pleasure.
City Views is a production of KCPW in Salt Lake City. Our technical director is Jesse Ellis. Ryan Cron composed our theme music. Tomorrow, a conversation with the new president of Westminster College, Brian Levin-Stankovich. So join us for that tomorrow. For City Views, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce.